Oh, hello there, wherever you're listening, however you're listening, 88.1 FM or streaming us live from anywhere in the world on the WIPR app or at WIPR.org. This is Midday. My name's Gabe Ortiz, filling in for the immortal Tom Hall, and I'll be with you for the next 60 minutes. Thank you so much for choosing to spend even just a little bit of your day, wherever you are, with us here at WIPR. On the docket for the day, at 12:40, we'll be speaking with 105.7 beat reporter Cordell Woodland about the Baltimore Ravens preseason victory against the Indianapolis Colts and preview their upcoming exhibition tomorrow against the Dallas Cowboys. In about 20 minutes, we'll be joined by Brandon Wilson from We Are Us, a violence intervention group here in Baltimore, to discuss the positive headlines we've seen around homicide and gun violence, but are the communities that need it most actually feeling the difference? 410-662-8780 is the number to call to join the conversation. Right now, we're joined in Studio A. You may know him as Mr. Politics. I know him as Hassan Giordano, Chief of External Affairs at the State's Attorney's Office. Hassan, how are we doing today?
I'm just right. How you doing, brother?
It's great to have you here, man. Long time no see. So getting into today's conversation, I mentioned a little bit in my opening there, we're seeing all these headlines about how far homicide numbers are coming down, how far gun violence is coming down. And I'm curious where you see the correlation between those very positive headlines that the city hasn't seen for quite some time and the work you and your team and State's Attorney Ivan Bates are doing at the office.
Well, I think it boils down to one simple phrase. If you want to continue to do crime as you've been doing it, and especially carrying an illegal firearm, pack your toothbrush. State's attorney said that January 3rd, 2023. He meant it. He sent a message to those who continue to break crime in the city of Baltimore, who continue to walk around freely with illegal handguns. And you saw the difference in the past 2.5 years now, where crime has taken a dramatic decrease across the board, but especially repeat violent offenders. State's attorney made it a focus on going after repeat violent offenders, though, especially those with gun violence. The first year in, the first 2 or 3 months, we went to the Maryland General Assembly, got an increase in the criminal penalties phase of anybody who possesses, illegally wears, carries, or transports a illegal firearm from 3 years to 5 years. And then they went after them. And just if you look at the last 2 years of Ms. Mosby's administration compared to the first 2 years of the base administration, you see that the brave men and women of BPD are making about the same amount of arrests. Previously, it was about 2,100 or so, 2,200 arrests. In the past 2 years, it's been about 2,400. But the biggest difference, Gabe, is that those who are getting those 5 years without parole, it went from 781 to 1,700.
Wow.
That have been put away. Total, then you get federally indicted. So if they didn't want to take the plea from the state, then we worked hand in hand with the U.S. Attorney's Office, Eric Barron, and was able to send them there. Over 150 cases went to the feds, who could give them up to about 12 years behind bars. So you had this 1-2 punch on the state and federal side. But then you got to go back to what some of the stuff on the local level is doing, right? The mayor, GVRS, they have an approach to some of the kind of low-hanging fruit, I would say, who are saying, sending the letters to those that they knew that are doing group. That's what GVR says, group violence, right? So they were targeting those within those groups and saying, look, we're going to send you these letters. If you're not going to adhere to some of the things that we're telling you to do, then we're coming for you. So it was that carrot and stick approach. They had the carrot, we had the big stick, and you've seen the decrease, historic. We haven't seen these type of numbers in over 50 years in the city of Baltimore. So again, as the state's attorney likes to say, it's the team approach. If the mayor is the quarterback of the team, then the prosecutor is the defense of the team, right?
Sure.
And the Baltimore Ravens would have never won a Super Bowl without Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. Right?
Two Super Bowls.
defense wins championships, as they say. And so the prosecutors, both from the state side and the federal side, I think can take a lot of credit. But again, it goes to all sides. The problem is a lot of people, especially when it's good, love to raise up their hand and say it was all about me.
Sure.
And I think we got to get away from that, because at the end of the day, everybody is involved in this, whether it's the mayor's office, Monzi, whether it's the state attorney's office, whether it's the U.S. attorney's office, the DEA, the federal partners, but also the community. The community has been a big part of this. Community leaders have been able to stand up and start going to court because, look, we cannot make cases if we don't have viable witnesses and victims stepping up to be able to go to court to help us make these cases. BPD has a lot more time and to focus on clearing these cases. That's why we see a clearance rate of over 60% right now, which is a big turn in the tide from the past 10, 15 years.
Sure.
So that's where you start to see the success chip away, and that's why we got the numbers we have today.
And how much of that do you think is having Ivan Batesley in the state's attorney's office along with this whole team inspiring folks within the BPD, inspiring folks within these communities that actually see results that come from the work that they're doing? And what I mean by that is I think it's very easy to get discouraged to step up and say, I'll be a witness, or as a police officer to say, I'm going to make arrests, if you're not confident that the people that you're going against are going to actually face consequences for whatever crime they committed. It was a very common thing that we heard from folks in Baltimore that I go to the police and I report something, or if I'm an officer, I arrest somebody and they're back on the street within a week. And was that part of the approach? How much of that was part of the approach when Ivan Batesley came in saying, we need to change the mentality and the psychology behind why people want to come forward to try and put criminals behind bars? How important was that for state's attorney Batesley in his office?
Well, it's huge. I think that the state's attorney coming in knew two things. Remember, he was a criminal defense attorney for 20 some years before he was a prosecutor before that. So he understood the criminal element. He sat side by side with murderers. Right. He had clients who were had gun offenses come out on bail, come to visit him in his law office, and they already have another gun on them. Right. The very next day,
sure.
Dropping out of their pants. And it was the reason why is because they did not fear prosecution. They didn't fear the stick approach to it. The past 10 years prior to him coming in, we saw 300 plus homicides. Clearance rates were down. And it's because the officers didn't have enough time to clear cases because there was so much going on. Now you see a different approach. Coming in the door, state's attorney warns the criminal element, one, we're coming after you. No more days of, you know, we're sitting on our hands, not doing anything. You're going away, and you're going away for a period of time. Not forever, but enough, long enough to sit you down long enough so you can start to think about your actions.
Sure.
Hopefully you take advantage of the programs like Monzi and them have with GVRS during that period of time. But if not, you want to come home and do it again, we're going to send you away even longer. But on the flip side of that, as you talked about, we also had to send a message to the victims and witnesses that it's okay to come forward. And these are the practices that we've put in place in order to keep you protected, but at the same time, ensure that you get justice in each and every one of those cases. And I think if you look at them in totality, it's been very effective.
My name is Gabe Ortiz, filling in right now for Tom Hall, speaking with the Chief of External Affairs at the State's Attorney's Office, Hassan Giordano, a.k.a. Mr. Politics. 410-662-8780 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation and have your say, or you can email us midday@wypr.org. Another very big issue around the time of State's Attorney Ivan Batesley winning his election was juvenile offenders. And it kind of goes hand in hand with the issue we were just talking about, that we were seeing this huge spike in carjackings. We were seeing huge spikes in things like robberies and shoplifting. And I'm curious what the state of juvenile offenders are right now in Baltimore City, particularly from the perspective of the state's attorney's office. Are we seeing those numbers go down? Because during the 2024 election for mayor, it was one of the number one things people were talking about. And I feel like it's not quite the headline than it used to be. Is that just the news cycle doing its thing, or are we actually seeing that issue become less of an issue?
Look, it's still an issue that we still got to make progress on, but we have been making. Look, the new secretary, you got to salute the governor, made a change at that position, right? Taking away the secretary of Department of Juvenile Services, put it in Betsy Tolentino, who has been a breath of fresh air. She's come in. Clearly, she has the experience and the background to be able to come in, hit the ground running, and she's done that. I think the state's attorney and anybody who's run across her will understand it's a different day. It's a different sheriff in town, and we have been seeing some progress. The problem is, and this is why I try to explain to people, if you remember, about 6 months into State's Attorney Batesley's administration, we were seeing this uptick in juvenile crime. He was the one who was calling out the fact that we have to do something about it. And I'll never forget this because in July and August of that year, he's on Fox, he's on television and on radio programs such as YPR, and the leadership kept saying, oh, you're saying, you're talking about something that you don't really know about, and there's no issue here. September, the House of Delegates had an oversight hearing on juvenile crime, and they had the former secretary in, and of course, he made the case that there is no real juvenile crime crisis.
Yeah.
Then we saw everything kind of play out, and they realized, oh, state's attorney knew what he was talking about. It took a little bit of time, but then we had about a package, about six bills in from our office, going after juvenile crime reform. Fortunately, the governor and the General Assembly stepped forward. They passed the juvenile reform legislation in 2024. You're starting to see the effects of that now starting to take effect, and you're starting to see some of those things play out. That's why you're starting to see the decrease in juvenile crime. We still have an issue? Absolutely. But has things gotten a lot better than they were two and a half years ago? Without a doubt.
Sure. And was something that Ivan Bates ran on very hard, it was something that it seemed to be the whole center of his campaign, was these quality of life crimes, right? Things like loitering, things like public intoxication, things like public urination, things that just make it a little bit difficult to walk around comfortably in the city. And now all we're hearing for headlines are homicide rates, gun violence, all the things we've been talking about since you joined the show. And I'm curious, is that still a priority for State's Attorney Bates? And are we seeing progress on these quality of life crimes? I can say that when I walk around the city, when I walk around Baltimore, I do feel like it's certainly a better situation than it was before State's Attorney Bates came in. But it doesn't feel like it's the center of the conversation like it was when he was running his campaign. So is that still a priority in the state's attorney's office? And are we seeing progress for a decrease in quality of life crimes?
It's definitely one of the most important priorities to the Bates administration. And it's a frustrating set of facts right now. Just to be honest with you, perception is reality. And if you ask most Baltimore City residents, especially in a certain number areas that I could probably list off right here on this airwaves in terms of neighborhoods, they would tell you absolutely not. It's getting worse. And I think part of that problem is, even though homicides, non-fatal shootings, that violent crime reduction we've seen, most people don't see that on their everyday travels, work, you know, home, things of that sort. But they do see the quality of life crimes. They do see when somebody broke into their car.
Yeah.
They do see when there's people loitering on your corner, selling drugs, and you can't do anything about it. You're held hostage in your own community.
Sure.
And the problem is, we haven't gotten to a point to this today that law enforcement is doing enough with the citation docket. The citation docket was something that the state's attorney on day one told the commissioner, all that stuff that the prior administration was talking about, not locking, oh, you can do that now. But what we had to realize was the consent decree is in a place.
Sure.
And the BPD was only can go after in a certain manner how they can go after individuals for low-level crimes. That's what created the citation docket. This is a mechanism that allows an officer not to be able to get off the beat. So if they see somebody loitering, selling drugs, possessing drugs, instead of locking them up, going through the paperwork, taking them out central booking, you can write them a citation. That citation then leads to them going to court. They can get 5 hours of community service in the community that they were loitering, trespassing, or selling drugs to give back to that community. And then they also have services there right there in the courtroom when they go to court. So if you have a drug problem, there's substance abuse there. If you need employment services, all of that is right there, right? These wraparound services. The problem is, Gabe, they've written maybe, BPD to this day has only written about 249 citations in 2 years.
Yeah.
Right? MTA has written more citations than the Baltimore City Police.
How do you inspire them to write more?
Look, I think everybody is trying. Matter of fact, when I leave here, I'm about to go right back to the office. We have a meeting about this with a major from one of the districts in Baltimore who is trying to really ramp it up for his district. I don't want to say that there's not a try. We've been, Trish Darrows from our office has trained every single law enforcement agency in the city several times on how to do citation. You got to remember, they weren't given citations for over 10 years now.
Right? Yeah.
They weren't even locking people up for these low-level crimes prior to us coming in. So, and you have a lot of new officers, so they had to learn this new process all over again, right? some for the first time. So we've trained them. We've shown them the process. Now it's about the motivation. Like, how do we get there? Case in point, Pennsylvania Avenue, those overdose crises that we've seen, that's a prime opportunity to be able to go up there and give people, when again, I heard BPD and the mayor's office saying we're not going to citate or lock our way out of it. But I think if you ask the people in that community who are tired of seeing people all day, every day, selling drugs on their corner, using drugs right there on our corner, we have to do something. That something could be the citation docket.
My name is Gabe Ortiz, speaking right now with Hassan Giordano, the chief of external affairs over at the state's attorney's office, working with state's attorney Ivan Bates. I remember a moment very vividly when it was the mayoral campaign of 2024, and Ivan Bates had a press conference to endorse former Mayor Sheila Dixon to win that campaign. And what Ivan Bates said, I was at that press conference, he said, "This endorsement doesn't mean that anybody's a bad person, doesn't mean that people don't get along, but this is the direction that I want to see the city go." And I think if you read through the very thin lines of that quote, it's saying, I don't have a personal issue with Mayor Brandon Scott. I don't think that he's a bad person. I don't even think that we have a bad relationship, but this is the endorsement that I want to make for this election. Obviously, as we know, Brandon Scott goes on to win re-election. And the reason I bring that up is because I'm very curious what the relationship is between the state's attorney's office and the mayor's office right now. Obviously, we're making progress on the things that are important. The homicide rate is down. Gun violence is down. Quality of life crimes are down. Baltimore is a better place to live now than I think it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. But I feel like when I see these press conferences that Mayor Scott has, we're not hearing a whole lot about state's attorney Ivan Bates. We're not hearing a whole lot about the work that's being done at the state's attorney's office. So how would you characterize the state of that relationship between the mayor's office and the state's attorney's office?
A work in progress.
A work in progress. Gotcha.
Look, I'll say this. The mayor's office has a lot more to do than just public safety.
Sure.
The state's attorney tell you all day long, I only got one job to do. And by all means, in all measures, he's been doing his job very, very well. Mayor has a whole lot of other stuff to do, education, you know, everything else.
Everything.
I do say that, you know, he has new leadership over there with a new chief of staff, Calvin Young. We've been working with him and his administration, Faith Leach and others, to really ramp up some things that I can't discuss here.
Sure.
That will help make Baltimore even better. Right.
Yeah.
But I think regardless of the relationship, at the end of the day, people need to look at the results. 2.5 years of this administration. If you go back, I always tell people, look from 2020 to 2022, right? Where Mayor Scott was first in office. Marilyn Mosby was the state's attorney. Homicides were 300 plus each year. Violence wasn't going down. We didn't see the traction that in the trends that we see now. 2023 till now, regardless of the relationship, those two black men have been doing great work, meaning Mayor Scott, state's attorney Ivan Bates, and both of the administrations. Is it going to be perfect, peaches and cream? Absolutely not. It never will be. I don't care who's in office. But at the end of the day, they're getting results done for the people of Baltimore. And I think the people of Baltimore should be proud of both of them.
I'll tell you what, let's take a call real quick. We got Ryan calling in from Baltimore, a recent police officer, I believe. Ryan, you're on the air. Have your say.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Listen, I just a little bit of frustration. First of all, huge shout out to all the men and women, former and current of Baltimore Police Department. Keep digging, y'all. We're going to make it one way or the other. Listen, the criminal citation thing is a farce. To go through all of this stuff and then to put more weight, think of all this stuff. We're short-staffed. We're working with minimal help. We're chasing around juveniles. The legislation for that is terrible. We're serving warrants. We're serving GORAs. We're working ourselves to death, and now you're saying, hey, write some criminal citations. It's not rocket science. That's why it's not getting done. We already have too much to do already. You can find stuff, right? You can find money to do stuff for everybody else in the world, but Baltimore City gets to scrape the bottom of the bucket. It's extra work. It's extra work. And it's not that it wouldn't help, but it would help if it was planned out a little bit more. It's not a reasonable thought. I mean, you've got people that are rotating schedules to fill gaps. Baltimore City Police are the most unappreciated, most overworked department in the world, in my opinion. And they say, oh, hey, stop what you're doing and argue with somebody who might not have an ID, a person who might have dealt with the police at a different time before we started reform, before we started getting better, before we started educating officers more. you know, they don't want to give their information. What if they're homeless? What do you do then? And then you're going to give it a citation to a person who can't afford to eat food. It's hard on the streets. It's hard for everybody. It's hard for us, and we're working. But then you want us to stop what we're doing and write a citation for somebody who's not going to show up to court, who's not going to pay the fine, and winds up being a drain on the population anyway. Just my two cents.
Appreciate the call there, Ryan.
So if I could push back a little bit, and I agree with Ryan on many of his points. There's no knock on the brave men and women of BPD. We work tremendously with them. Matter of fact, the state's attorney and the commissioner meet monthly. Their command staff, our command staff meets monthly. Number one, citations are not financial, right? There is no financial penalty to them. They are criminal citations, meaning that, again, they go to court for whatever the crime was. They can get 5 hours of community service. If you do it twice, it'll be 10 hours of community service. But it is not a conviction. If you complete the 5 hours or 10 hours of community service, that gets taken right. You don't even have to go back to court. It gets taken right off, right? It's about holding people accountable for their actions. I hear what you're saying. You're right. They're short-staffed. We went to roll calls after roll calls. You have 7, 8 people in roll call, right, for the day. It's no slight to the BPD. We need more men and women there. The citation actually helps. Because instead of locking them up, having to take them to Central Booking, do all the paperwork, you're seeing the criminal action right there. You're writing the citation and you're moving on, but you're still in your command post, right? You don't have to leave that spot. So that way we're making sure that people are held accountable for their actions. But at the same time, we're doing it in the least intrusive way possible. We cannot expect, you can't keep making excuses that we're short staffed. So what? We're just going to sit in our cars all day? Like, come on. I think BPD will tell you the same thing. We're trying. And that's all we can do. And again, we will continue to work side by side, hand in hand with BPD and their command staff to do everything we can to ensure we're holding people accountable for their actions, but in the same time, working together collaboratively to keep with these positive trends and results that we're seeing across the board.
Hassan, I could do a full hour with you, but we're running over here. I got one more question before we let you out of here. We got the midterms right around the corner. Mm-hmm. Is State's Attorney Ivan Bates, does he have plans to run for re-election for State's Attorney?
I don't know. That's something we got to talk about.
Stay tuned. All right. Sounds good. We'll stay tuned on that one. Hassan Giordano, Mr. Politics, Chief of External Affairs over at the State's Attorney's Office. Thank you so much for giving me some time today, man. I really appreciate it. Can't wait to hear more about what you and your team are doing.
Always a pleasure, brother.
Awesome stuff. We're going to step aside for just a moment here. Coming up on the other side of this break, we're going to have Brandon Wilson from We Are Us, a violence intervention group here in Baltimore, learn about all the great work they're doing in the community and learn about the perspective from the boots on the ground about all these headlines we're seeing about declines in crime, homicide, gun violence, and all these other things. Really, really excited for this conversation. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is Midday.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
Welcome back into Midday. I'm Gabe Ortiz, filling in for Tom Hall. Coming up on Monday, Tom revisits his conversation with best-selling author Ann Patchett about the annotated release of her classic 2001 book, Bel Canto. They'll discuss what we can learn by looking back at our earlier work and younger selves with grace and humor. That's coming up on the next Midday. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Baltimore's historic reduction in homicides, and we're seeing all the news stories, we're seeing all the press conferences, but I really want to talk a little bit about what people in the communities are feeling, and the only way that we can get that sentiment is by talking to folks who are in the community. So right now, we're joined by Brandon Wilson from Violence Intervention Group here in Baltimore, We Are Us. Brandon, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for giving us some time. Get a little bit into that mic, just a little bit there. Thank you. So before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty here, why don't you let the people know, if they're not familiar with We Are Us, what you guys do and what you're all about?
Yeah, so We Are Us is an organization. We have been in existence for almost 8 years now. And what we do is we go into community and connect to the people, bring resources such as jobs, substance abuse treatment, housing, anything that we could do to help the people in the community grow and evolve from one stage of their life to the next stage of their life.
And I feel like a lot of folks, particularly here in Baltimore City, have an uneasy relationship with law enforcement, have an uneasy relationship with some of the powers that be here in Baltimore. And what I like so much about We Are Us and why I wanted to bring you guys in is because you offer an alternative to that.
Correct.
You offer a solution that exists sometimes before the problem even shows itself, that
right.
we want to get in before the violence starts, before shooting starts, before conflict starts. We want to be in these communities to make sure it doesn't happen. I know you guys do a lot of these community walks. Could you tell us a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah, so the community walk is, like I said in the beginning, to bring resources, jobs to the people in the community, because a lot of times people who live in West Baltimore never leave out of West Baltimore. People who leave out of East Baltimore never leaves out of East Baltimore. So if you're never leaving out of your current neighborhood, then you're not going to know what's really going on in the, you know, powers that be that have resources that can help
sure.
you get up out of that situation. So what we do, we made an effort to say we are going to go into the worst parts of the city and we're going to bring them the resources where they're at so they can have no excuse on saying we didn't know about it.
Yeah. And why did you decide to get involved on a personal level? Were you part of the founding of We Are Us? Is this something that you came into when they were already in operation? What inspired you to join the team?
Yeah, so I've been with We Are Us from day one. And so, you know, we were already doing the work on the ground every day. So it was like when we just got to the point where as though we understood that all of us is better than none of us. So we needed to create an organization that was inclusive, no matter your religious denomination, no matter your color, no matter your creed, no matter your way of thinking. We just knew that if you wanted to save Baltimore City and you was really concerned about that, let's unite, let's pull our resources, and let's go about dealing with our city in a collective manner.
And something that has become a trademark of We Are Us is the Stop the Beef Hotline. I know that's something you're very involved with. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, so the Stop the Beef Hotline is an alternative method where, you know, we deal with beefs in the schools, in the neighborhoods, in the homes, in the neighborhoods I already mentioned. But whereas though we don't involve no police, we're willing to mediate the situation, sit down with both parties if they're willing to sit down with us. And like I say, just help them to see the common ground and to see how, what is the path forward. Okay, if you do this, let's understand now. You have family, you have children. What's going to happen to you if you're not around for your children? Who's going to take care of your daughter? Who's going to watch her go to her prom? Who's going to help your son with his homework? Who's going to take your son to his football games? So just having a real life approach to say, hold up, let's slow down for a minute. Let's look at what's going on. And is this worth it? And if it's not worth it, what can we do to, you know, make this thing a little easier for the both of y'all?
Yeah. And I feel like we see so much of the violence in Baltimore City stems from personal conflict, right? Maybe in a time before I was born, I'm 27 years old, not to age anybody out there listening. And not to say that this isn't still a problem, but there was a lot of gang warfare. There was a lot of drug warfare. And I feel like in modern Baltimore, a lot of the issues we see are these personal beefs that you're talking about, is that two people just disagree on something and a situation that doesn't need to escalate to violence escalates to violence. And unfortunately, you see people get shot, or in the worst cases, you see people die. And, you know, we just saw a very startling case of this happening in Park Heights not too long ago. I know that you guys have been very active in Park Heights recently. Could you talk a little bit about what you guys are doing there?
Well, we've been active in Park Heights from the beginning. That's been the neighborhood that we adopted. So a lot of our resources going to the Park Heights area and a lot of our time going to the Park Heights area.
Why Park Heights?
I can't answer that question, but I just know that was the threshold of where we started at. You know, and
sure.
I guess we had to make a choice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Gotta start somewhere, right?
So, you know, we started in Park Heights, and so we've been working that community, like I say, for the last 7 years. That's been the main area that we always are in. So, you know, yeah, I just wanted to just say that part.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, we had this bad shooting in Park Heights. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe a 5-year-old girl ended
right.
up getting a gunshot wound in
sad.
Her hand. I mean, it's as sad as
sad.
It could possibly
right.
be. And so when you and your folks at We Are Us see something like that happen, what's the initial thought? Like,
yeah.
how do you guys mobilize when something like that happens?
I mean, we got to respond. So we begin hitting all of our partners. And so we just come, because a 5-year-old getting shot, a five-year-old getting hurt, that has to hit home for everybody. And so we hit our partners, and then we just collectively go into that area and just, you know, engage.
Yeah.
Engage, engage, engage. And we talking to the people just about, you know, because there was a time in the city where children and women were off limits.
Yeah.
You know, but it seems like, you know, over the last few years, that dynamic has changed, and it's like the attitude has changed, the mindset has changed, whereas though people not caring about nothing. So, you know, trying to just even have conversations with, you know, people who are, you know, maybe living that way of life, saying like, listen, you cannot be just doing certain things just reckless like that, where, because what if that was your child?
Yeah.
You know, not saying that you did it, but what if you did something like that and somebody hurt your child?
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel? So just trying to, you know, bring the empathy back to a person to be able to empathize with a situation, even though they may not be dealing with that situation at that moment.
My name is Gabe Ortiz, speaking right now with Brandon Wilson of We Are Us, a violence intervention group here in Baltimore. They're going into communities. They're talking to folks who are trying to make their lives better, or folks who maybe need to be shown the path to a better life, and making it clear that there are alternatives outside of working with law enforcement to be able to make those decisions and to have paths laid out for you. And speaking about having paths laid out for you, I know that you guys do more than just, you know, get ahead of violence or, you know, come in after violence takes place. You're also trying to set people up for the future in a different direction. You guys do things like CDL training. You guys do all different kinds of workplace training. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so from the very beginning, the job piece, that was very key to We Are Us, because we understand that we can't tell a man, don't sell drugs, and don't offer him something else.
Yeah.
An alternative. So that was very key in the beginning. And we, over the last 7 years, we have gotten so many people working, gotten so many people training. Like, the numbers are, I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, but I'm telling you right now, so many people have got jobs, so many people have got training, and all those things have been adding to the reduction of crime going on in the city. Because now, if I'm working, if I have a career, I'm very less likely to commit a crime, because now I've been feeding my family, I've been taking care of myself, I've been learning a new way.
And also, you got less time to do that kind
less
of stuff,
time,
you know, because
stuff.
It's like, I got this obligation to this job, and by extension, this obligation to my family. And so, you know, something you mentioned there was, we're seeing all these historic drops in homicides and gun violence. I think a big part of that is exactly what you said, groups like We Are Us getting into these communities and showing people a different way. But are folks in these communities that need it the most, are they feeling safer, do you think? When you talk to these folks, do you think they feel safer than they did 3, 4, 5 years ago? Or are those just a lot of headlines that we're seeing?
Yeah, I think not only are they definitely feeling safe, because they see all of the organizations working together to bring the crime and the violence down.
Is that something that's new, this collaboration we're seeing between these groups, or has it always been there?
I think it's new, yes. I'm not going to say fairly new, but it's new, because we understand, because all of us are understanding. We're not enemies. We're not working against each other. You may be over here doing what you do. I may be over here doing what I'm doing, but we all working for the same goal. And that's the beauty of the thing that we're doing in Baltimore, because, you know, we all have working relationships and we support each other. So if you're having an organization, so if Tendere Family is having an event, we support Tendere Family. If Safe Streets are having an event, we support Safe Streets. You know, we are being visible in these, with these different organizations when they are having their event. You know, the Rich Program out Cherry Hill, we supporting them. You know, we responders, we report, so it's like, it's so many organizations in the city, and we are showing out when each of us have an event.
Sure.
And that's what's bringing the unity in our city.
Yeah, y'all are kind of alley-ooping to each other, right?
Absolutely.
That it's like, it doesn't matter who's scoring, as long as we get the points on the board, that's the most important thing.
Absolutely.
And so, again, my name's Gabe Ortiz, speaking right now with Brandon Wilson of We Are Us. We're running a little bit over here, but I got one more question for you.
Yes,
if folks want to get involved with We Are Us, if they want to be somebody who is helping with the violence intervention, who's helping with the job training, or if somebody out there thinks that their community could benefit from having you guys on the streets, on the corners, on the sidewalks, what's the best way that they can reach out to you? What's the best way they can get involved?
So you can look at our social media. We have Facebook. We have Instagram. Our webpage is weareus.org, right? We have meetings every Monday and every Saturday and every Thursday. We are in the streets all throughout the week. And if something happened spontaneous, we responded to that as well. And I just also want to say that we also have a CDL school, Class A CDL, where we are offering commercial driving for Class A CDLs for $1,250 on the Go Trucking Center.
And he's wearing the shirt right now. Can people buy one of the CDL shirts?
Yes, sir. You can buy one of those shirts as well.
Okay, awesome. All of that at weourus.com. Weourus.com. If folks out there, you know, are looking for job training, if they're looking to try and set themselves up on a better path in life, I can't think of a better place to go right now than We Are Us. They're doing awesome work in our communities, as they have been for years now. Brandon, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it, my man. I hope to have you and maybe some other members of the team back on the show sometime soon. This was excellent. Again, my name is Gabe Ortiz, filling in for Tom Hall. On the other side of this break, we're going to be speaking with 105.7 beat reporter Cordell Woodland, talking about the Ravens' preseason victory over their Colts, their game against the Cowboys tomorrow night, and some Baltimore Orioles. I know, folks, it's going to be a sad conversation about our Orioles, but we got to do it. He's at Camden Yard, so we'll make some time for that as well. You're listening to Midday. I'm Gabe Ortiz.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WIPR, your local NPR news station.